Okay, our next session is on, as I said, navigating legislation and the documents that go along with it. Our two presenters are from LSC, senior attorneys at LSC. Julie Rischel is the division chief of our Commerce and Labor and Retirement section of the staff. And Megan Comiskey is our assistant deputy director for the whole research and bill drafting staff. So they have a lot of experience and will be able to give you the an overview of what you need to be able to understand legislation. So I'll turn it over to them.
Good morning. As Mark said, my name is Julie Rischel, and Megan and I are here to basically explain navigating and understanding Ohio legislation. We realize that you're probably familiar with how a bill becomes a law, but we're going to be presenting some additional details that could trip you up along the way. So the first part of the legislative process, as you might guess, is requesting a bill draft from our office. There are two ways you can make this request. You can submit a request to our assignment clerk, email, a phone call, a memo, any method is fine. Or you can also contact a member of our staff and we can take the request. As Mark mentioned, our research staff is broken up into various subject areas, so you can call one of us in the subject area, and even if it's not the right subject area, we can still take the requests and get it to the right people. So once your request is submitted, it's going to be assigned to a drafter to begin working on your request. When you submit a request, you can call with just, I have an idea, to license tree cutters, or you might actually have proposed language. However you want to submit it is fine, but this drafter is going to look over a request and contact you with any questions the drafter may have about your request. So there could be various phone calls, meetings, conferences with yourself, your staff, our staff, and even interested parties to get the draft ready for how you would like it to be. As part of this process, a drafter may present to you some research memoranda. And in your, each of you should have a packet of paper. I think we're the only packet of paper passed out. And inside you'll find two examples of research memos. One's got a box with a summary on it. The other's kind of a to-from memo. These are samples of the type of research our office can provide. We cannot provide any legal advice, so we cannot advise as to whether your proposal is constitutional, for example. But we can research things like, what are other states doing? What is the law on the issue now? What fiscal effects might my proposal have? Now, these examples that are in your packet may be slightly outdated. But they're basically provided to give you a sample of what we do. And also note that you don't have to be in the middle of a bill drafting process to request research. We can do research at any point in time. And like a bill draft request or an amendment request, our research is confidential for you. So these, we did get permission to release these to you, but it is confidential. So once the drafter is done, you have worked it all out and the drafter's prepared the language, the bill draft is still not ready to be sent to you. It's going to go through four additional layers of review before it actually gets to your office. The first level of review is by an LSC division chief, and this is where my role comes in. So I take the language submitted by the drafter and I look at the instructions and I make sure, similar to the drafter, that it does what you intend. And I will look for grammar issues, punctuation, as well as constitutional questions to make sure your bill works. After I am done, then I send it on to our legal review. And legal review is going to focus in on, is it drafted in accordance with how a bill has to be drafted? Are there constitutional issues that need to be raised to the sponsor? Questions like that. Once that review is done, it goes to technical review. And our technical review is going to be reading through the changes to look for, again, grammar, punctuation, do you actually have a full sentence, things like that. And also, if you renumber or reletter divisions or section numbers, they're going to double check to make sure we got all of the cross references to the former section in the revised code. After that technical review is done, it lastly goes to proofreading and polishing. And our proofreading and polishing staff will sit and read the changes out loud to each other to, again, make sure all of it is as it should be. Are there words missing? Do we have, again, not a full sentence? That sort of issue. So once that is all completed, it's going to get sent to you. And it's going to get sent to you via email. And it's going to go to a special email box known as your Solar email. When you receive the email, and I'm not sure how well you can read the body of the email, it's going to give you information that your bill is attached, and it's going to give you the contact information for the drafter and the reviewer in case you have any questions or in case you want some changes made to the bill. The bill will be attached, as well as sometimes we produce cover letters to go with your bill. It might be to explain just what the bill does. It might be to raise some additional issues we discovered while drafting, that sort of information, as well as maybe any additional research we might find or maybe you asked for when you submitted your bill draft request. So what does a bill look like? When you originally get it from LSC, it's going to have an L number at the top. This is just a randomly generated number by our office for record keeping purposes. So in this case, you can tell that this bill is being drafted for the 132nd General Assembly. If you have a bill, let's say from the 131st or a previous General Assembly that you would like to have for the 132nd, it does have to be redrafted so it indicates that it is for the 132nd because it has to be reintroduced. Also, you can actually have multiple versions of a bill drafted before you're ready to introduce it. When that happens, the L number just picks up a dash number at the end. So let's say you want changes to L1234. The next version you receive from our office usually will be L1234-1. And you can have as many dash versions as you'd like. So now you've got this bill, and how do you read it? And so I want to walk you through. In your packet, you should have, it's a document that looks like this. It's House Bill 5 from the last General Assembly. It should be hopefully right after the memos. And it has the various parts of a bill labeled. And every bill generally has most of these parts. It won't have all. It does depend on what you're doing in the legislation. But a bill should have a header at the top, and that's going to tell you the version, the bill number, and what General Assembly it's in. You're going to have a title. Every bill has to have a title. That is a constitutional requirement. You're going to have what we refer to as the style clause. And if you look at the first page of the bill, you'll see this in capital bold, be it enacted by the state of Ohio or the General Assembly of the state of Ohio. Every bill has to have that language in it under the Constitution. Then you'll have what's called an enacting clause, which lists your amended and enacted sections. Then you actually have the sections of law being affected, a repeal clause, and uncodified sections. And I'm going to go through some of these in a little bit more detail. So as I mentioned, every bill has to have a title. There's two parts to your title. The first part is going to list out your sections of the revised code and an uncodified law that are being amended, enacted, or repealed. And they're always going to be in that order. Your amended, enacted, and repealed sections, revised code sections, will appear first, followed by any amended or repealed uncodified sections. Next, the bill's title has to have a description. This is a constitutional requirement. We have to briefly describe what the bill is going to do. And it's not describing what the intent of the bill is, this is what the bill does. So when you look at House Bill 5, if you flip to the second page, that's where you're going to start to see the revised code sections being amended and are enacted. And if you notice, you have the entire section for section 117.47 in the bill. This is also a constitutional requirement. We have to have the full text of the section that we are changing in the bill so that you can see the change. So for those of you who are familiar with federal legislation, this is where Ohio differs from federal legislation. Federal bills are drafted much more like our amendments are, which Megan's going to explain in a little bit. Additionally, as you might guess with House Bill 5, you can have multiple sections amended or enacted in a bill. they are going to be listed in numerical order, not subject matter order. So it is possible if you have a 100-page bill that the actual substance doesn't show up till page 50. But we have documents to help you work with that as well, that Megan's going to explain. So how do you know what's being changed in a bill? If you look on page 2, you're going to see, again, that I'm going to point to the same section. Existing law looks like normal type. There's no special font to it. It looks like a normal sentence structure. New language being added to the law or being proposed to be added is underlined. So if you look at section 117.47, you can see the underlined portions. This is the new language being proposed to be added to the statute. Language that's being proposed to be removed from the law or repealed is stricken. And we have a couple of really small examples in the bill showing where the language is being stricken. Now, there's one exception with respect to repeals and stricken language, and that is with respect to outright repeals. Outright repeals do not appear in the text of a bill draft. They don't appear as completely stricken through. Instead, you'll find their number, section number listed in the title and in what's called the repeal clause, which is found on page, on the last page of your bill. Now, in this case, our sample bill does not have an outright repeal clause. But an outright repeal clause just simply says, that's what it would look like in the title. It just simply says that section, I think the example is 127.13 of the revised code is hereby repealed. The repeal clause is going to have your outright repeals, and then it's going to have the list of sections that are being amended by the bill. And those will be indicated by the word existing. Your enacted sections, since they don't currently exist, do not appear in the repeal clause. So that's the bulk of the body of a bill. But occasionally, and dealing with your revised code sections, I should say. Occasionally, though, we have law proposed that is of a temporary and not general nature. Laws that are general and permanent, those are what we codify and put into the revised code. If it's temporary or special, it doesn't get codified. It's referred to as an uncodified section. And they're usually at the end of the bill. And they're numbered as parts of the bill. So if you look at our example again, you'll see that the revised code sections being amended are indicated by an SEC period. So if you see the full word section, it's actually an uncodified section. That's kind of how you can tell the difference of what you're looking at. Uncodified sections, when they're enacted, are not underlined. So that's another difference. Revised code sections being enacted are underlined. And I should say, if they're being amended or repealed, then you will see the stricken and the new language underlined. But just straight enacted is not underlined. So what are some examples of uncodified? The first example is the temporary law. And this is law that's in effect for less than 3 years. Now, I don't want that you to think that's a hard and fast rule, because temporary law is in effect for as long as it's needed. But the typical is if it's going to be in effect for less than 3 years, it's going in uncodified law. Four or more, it tends to be codified. An example that you are going to see a lot in the next few months is an appropriation. Appropriations can only be for 2 years or less. This is an example, I believe, from the budget bill of an appropriation for the state medical board. And you see the two columns, they indicate the two fiscal years that are being appropriated. Another example is a temporary committee or task force that's being created to study like one particular issue. And these kind of committees, once they submit their report, the committee is abolished and they're done. Those are typically uncodified. If a committee is going to be studying an ongoing issue, that's more likely to be in codified law. Another type of uncodified law is your special laws. And these are laws that don't apply throughout the state. They only apply in like one instance. A key example of that, and the example on your screen, is a land conveyance, when the state of Ohio, in this case, is granting a portion of land to the city of Toledo. It's a one-time deal. Once it's done, it's done. So that's why it doesn't go in permanent law. And the last type of example is the emergency clause. This is usually a last clause in the bill, and the effect of this is it gives the entire bill an immediate effective date. As you know, Ohio is a referendum state whereby our bills don't take effect until the 91st day after it's filed with the Secretary of State. This allows the time to collect referendum petitions in case the citizens of Ohio want to challenge the proposed law. There are three types of laws, though, that are not subject to the referendum. The first is an appropriation for an current expense. The second is a tax levy. And the third is a bill that has an emergency clause to it. Bills with an emergency clause have to have a two-thirds vote by each chamber to keep the emergency clause. And all three of those types, the appropriation, tax levy, and emergency clause, have to be in the bill's title. And that is basically the fast version of navigating a bill. And now Megan's going to take you through the bill process once it's been introduced.
Are there any questions up to this point before we jump? Sure, we'll jump right into that. So let's say you have your bill from LSC, you're happy with it. You may have gone through 14 or 15 versions, although we beg you, please no, but that does happen. So you're ready to get it introduced. There we go. So what does a bill need for introduction? The first thing that when you bring a paper copy of your bill to the House or Senate Clerk's office, they're gonna be looking for what we call the LSC stamp. And the LSC stamp tells the clerk that this has been properly prepared by LSC. It hasn't been prepared by an interested party or through some model language that you might have found out somewhere in the world. They need to know that it has kind of been through all of its paces and it's ready for introduction. And so the stamp that it ensures that that's the case. And that clerks will, I assume, tell you that if you need to stamp or you need it to go back through LSC review. Additionally, what the clerk will be looking for is a barcode on the bill, and that is generated by LSC's drafting system. So when you get the bill, it should have the barcode, and they'll scan that barcode, and that is the method of introduction. What happens when the clerk scans that in is that a number is assigned to the bill, and that number will stay with the bill through the entire legislative biennium. So in this case, it became House Bill 5. And at the top of the bill, as Julie talked about, you also can see kind of where the bill is in the process. So this particular example is the as passed by the Senate version. The other parts of the bill that will be applied when it's introduced are sponsors. So in this example, the primary sponsors, Representative Coonsey and Representative Kohler. And then as the bill went through the process, it also picked up co-sponsors, both in the House and the Senate. So once it's been introduced, the next step is committee action. And here we'll get into changing the bill. At a bill's first hearing committee, that is typically sponsor testimony. So usually the one or two members that are carrying the bill will come in and present to the committee to which the bill's been referred and explain why they're sponsoring the bill, what the problem is they're seeking to solve. For that first hearing and committee, LSC will be preparing a bill analysis. And the bill analysis is sort of a summary and explanation in layman's terms of what the bill is looking to do. And the bill analyses are updated as the bill goes through the process. So we do it when it's introduced, when it's reported from committee, when it passes each house. And the bill analysis, which is in your packet, an example of the House Bill 5 analysis, you'll see it contains a dot point summary at the beginning, and then goes into a little more detail in the content and operations section, and then ends with a history. So you can use each of those pieces and parts as you need to figure out what's happening with that bill. In the second hearing, you'll often get other testimony, proponent, opponent, just interested party testimony, as well as LSC will then prepare a fiscal note for the bill. And that will explain estimated revenue and expenditures associated with the bill, and also the effect on local governments above a minimal threshold. So you can be aware of that when talking to your constituents or interested parties about the bill. And similar to the bill analysis, the fiscal note will also be updated periodically throughout the process as the bill changes. So getting to changes. There are two ways to change a bill as it moves through the process. That's either by amendment or by a substitute bill. So we're going to talk about amendments first. And our amendments have two parts. You may only care about one or two, one of the parts, the easier one. So we have the amendment in context, which is your first, or is in your example packet about amendments. And that is a document that can show you the changes in context of the whole bill. So here we can see the blue underlined passage is being added to this House Bill 5 in the amendment. Like bill drafts and research requests, amendments are confidential requests with LSC. So this amendment is public, which is why we're able to share it with you. But we do keep those amendment requests and the drafts confidential. The document that you all may be a little more familiar with are the line commands. And here it's a simple explanation, in line X, take this action. And that will direct your colleagues in committee or on the floor what the changes you're seeking to accomplish with this amendment. And then if your amendment is adopted, the clerk's office or LSC, depending on the circumstances, will be able to then engross that change into the bill. The second way to change a bill is by substituting the bill. And so that will, usually the sponsors were typically the movers of substitute bills or the committee chairs, but other members can also request substitute versions as a bill moves through. So you can see, as Julie mentioned, in this case, what was L0475 was introduced, became House Bill 5, and now LSC has prepared a substitute bill. And you can see it's now L0475-1. So it's the second version of that bill. It's a substitute version.
Next question.
Uh-huh.
So if multiple amendments are coming in confidentially, have the number of sequences first come, first serve? Is that correct?
Yes, and the amendments have their own numbering system. And so similar to bills, they will also get a four-digit number. It'll be AM 131, then your four-digit number. And just like with bills, you can request multiple versions of amendments, so you may see dash versions of amendments as well. And then if you want to actually offer them, you would give them to the committee staff or give them to the clerk if it's for the floor, and then they become more public at that point.
So if you get two amendments that are similar in nature, how do you deal with that conflict? Do you report them out as two similar amendments, or do you encourage the members to speak with one another? What do you do?
You'd probably want to speak with your committee chair a little bit more about that. I know that especially I spent a lot of years working with the budget bill, and so we do get a lot of either the same or very similar requests that I know were submitted to the committee chairperson. And so that's just a matter for then, I assume, the members to kind of work out with the committee chair on any given committee. Now, if those amendments are actually both accepted and LSC has the task of, we call it harmonizing the two amendments that may be dealing with the same section of law or somehow kind of bumping up against each other. And then if we have to, we would work with the committee and the sponsors as well.
Amendments are coming in confidentially. How does one member know another amendment of similar nature?
They don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer. We can't tell one member about another person's amendment. So that's like Megan said, in committee, it would be better to work it out between the members.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when it's reported, you won't see it on this LSC version, but then when the clerk prepares the committee report, the names will all appear. If that doesn't make any sense, I don't know if that makes any sense.
I've heard two different ways on this. At what point can someone remove their name as a co-sponsor
in the
process?
Ooh, that's a...
Yeah, you should talk to the clerk in your respective house about that. Generally, when it's on the floor, I think you can move, have your name removed from it if you're a co-sponsor, and then it'll come on. We don't get into that. We don't get into the parliamentary procedures in LSC, but that's kind of my observation of
Yes, unless you talk to the clerk and get it taken off.
Another angle on that is you're on it when it leaves the House and the Senate, say it goes to the Senate, and they change it really substantially. Your name is still on there until you, pass to get it removed. And that's where I'm not sure about the exact process for that.
Another document LSC staff will prepare to help members understand legislation as it moves through the legislative process. We do prepare sub-bill comparative synopses. Now, we do primarily prepare these in the House. The Senate has not made it a required part of our basket of work. And this sub-bill comparative synopsis, I believe there's one in your packet for House Bill 5. It compares one version to another. And you'll see in columns with based on topics, and this will only address differences between the bills. Then when the committee has finished its work on a given bill and it's ready to ship it back up, the bill will be reported favorably from committee and go up to the Rules Committee or Rules and Reference Committee. At that point, it may go for third consideration and be voted on the floor, or the committee may decide it needs to be re-referred either back to the committee that originally heard it for more work or to another committee. For example, in the House, all bills that contain appropriations have to go through the Finance Committee at some point. Now, they may start their life in the legislature in a subject matter specific committee. So, for example, Julie oversees the production of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation budget. That will typically be referred to the House Insurance Committee. They will do their work on the bill in House Insurance, and then, or Commerce and Labor, I guess, one or the other. And then it will pop back into, it will be re-referred back into Finance for a quick set of hearings, typically, to look at the appropriations, particularly. If you have not been actively involved with a piece of legislation, but you'd like to know whether and how it's been changed, usually you can just look to the bill number. If it's been amended, it will then have an AM period before the bill number, amended House Bill 5. Similarly, if it's been substituted, you'll see sub House Bill 5. And occasionally we get really crazy and do both amendments and the substitute bill, and it will be an amended sub House Bill 5. Also in your packet are some examples of the full status report of legislation, which is available on the General Assembly website, which is in a grid format and gives you the whole history of a bill, as well as the individual bill page, which can give you a little more detailed status history so you can see what happened with House Bill 5. Then up next is third consideration, the floor vote. Again, we can do amendments for the floor. LSC will prepare those for you, and they may be heard on the floor, as well as updating our support documents, the bill analysis, and fiscal note. If it is passed from one house to the other, when it heads to the second house, we basically repeat the same process. It goes to committee. We prepare bill analyses and fiscal notes. We may prepare amendments or substitute versions. If the second house does amend the bill in committee, LSC prepares a synopsis of committee amendments, which is also in your packet, and that just briefly explains what the second house, what actions the second house took to the bill. And so this is a document that's going to be used by the first house when they're having a concurrence vote, when that bill goes back for agreement to the first house. So this helps the folks in the first house know what happened in the second house. And that's my extremely brief overview. Any other questions?
If a bill from the other chamber is being amended or modified, are the sponsors, do you notify the original sponsors that there's action going on, or is that the sponsor keep track of the
bill? LSC does not. The question is, does LSC have a role in updating the original sponsor in the first house of what's happening in the second house? And the answer is no, other than just by our general production of bill support documents.
That's where your caucus.
Not really related to the bill question, but I understand we can have LSC maybe render legal opinions on certain issues or not.
We do not offer legal advice. And you'll see that in the occasional memo. We are happy to speak on the state of the law and things of that nature and provide, you know, give you an overview of what's happening, but not in, we would not actually give a full legal opinion.
Well, I guess, so like if there's a legal issue back in the district and you want to know what does the law say mm-hmm. about that or what would apply to that current situation, in that case, can you offer an opinion on that? Or
I wouldn't say we're offering opinion, but we're telling you
what the law says
or what the law says in five other states or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, and we'll also tell you if there is case law before on that. So we won't just say no, we can't do that. We'll give you all the background information we can, but as far as forming an opinion then, it's kind of up to you. But like some issues, say the Supreme Court has said five times, you can't do that. Well, we'll let you know that, so that if you want to try again, it's because you know what you're doing,
And that's something else I want to, and it may have been said before, but we're going to draft what you ask us to draft. We're going to educate you, make sure we don't want anybody to feel foolish in committee if questions are thrown at them. But even if we have educated you and said, hey, the Supreme Court has said five times this is maybe not the best idea, we will draft that bill for you and you will have it in hand to take over for introduction.
Send a version back down to the respective chambers, or is it usually the back and forth through amendment?
Officially, the bill can really only go back once. It passes the House, Senate does something, it can go back to the House. The House says yes or no. And that's the end of it. And if they say no, then they can demand each other to have a conference committee. But there are universes in which everybody's just so entrenched in their positions that the bill just dies at that point. But we do have the occasional conference committee. They're kind of a fun event. They don't happen terribly often, but they're fun.
So that example right there you mentioned, it goes from the House to Senate. The Senate makes whatever changes, comes back to the House, and the House at that point is like, no, this isn't what we want. You mentioned committee of House members and Senate members, right, at that point, get together, right,
mm-hmm.
hash it out.
Yep.
So then, let's say they hash it out, and it comes, does it at that point go from the Senate back to the House again?
What they produce is called the report of conference, or the conference committee report, and that goes to both houses for a yes or no vote.
Okay. And it can't be amended on the floor. It's like yes or no, what the conferees agreed upon.
That's pretty much the last ditch effort at that point.
Yep. I thought I saw another hand. Did the hand? Yep.
I just had a question with regard to the fiscal analysis and the fiscal impact notes, which you guys develop when a bill has been introduced. When the bill is changed through an amendment, is there a protocol of you guys trying to update the analysis immediately, or what's the time process where you guys update it?
The fiscal note itself is updated at each stage of the bill. Now, in the interim, there are certain circumstances under which LSC will provide kind of on-the-spot updates about the effect of an amendment. That comes
up. They include a synopsis of the change when the amendment is accepted.
It's called a fiscal note addendum that may pop up in committee, for example.
And in fact, our next session is with our fiscal staff people, so maybe we can bring that up again. But it follows, by law, there's a local impact statement procedure. So bills, before they're voted out of committee, they need an update of
what this does on the revenue and spending effects on local government. So that's when you'll see these addenda.
Just for everyone else, I was voting on a bill on House floor, and I was relying on the analysis that had been provided. And then I was talking to another member about it. He said, well, that was based on before it was amended, a day before. So it's just difficult for me to try to see what had been the most updated portion.
Was that coming back over from the Senate? That's when you'll get that sometimes, like if the Senate amended it on the floor, there's an updated fiscal note, but not the bill analysis.
There's always an updated fiscal note. So.
The fiscal note, is it a static or dynamic analysis that you guys are doing? I mean, is it just this is the numbers, or is it more of like a dynamic economic statement? Or maybe both of
them. It's static in that sense. It tells what the effect is on state and local government revenues and expenditures now, like over the next year or as far out as we can determine. It doesn't, and this is an interesting question that we've been looking into a lot. The dynamic analysis, people kind of are talking about like what changes it would make in like behavior of businesses and things. And we haven't found a software package, basically, that we're comfortable with using on that yet. And we continue to do a lot of research. It's just briefly, the assumptions that go into it have to be made by someone. You have to predict the future for the assumptions that go in. And predicting the future is impossible.
I know you guys are always putting pressure cookers, and it would probably be helpful if we know what kind of a minimum turnaround time to expect once we give you a bill draft memo. I mean, obviously, the more complex the legislation is going to take a lot of time, but if we know that at minimum it's going to take 2 weeks or a month. Do you have a sense?
That's a tricky question because, like you say, it could be something that's changing one word in the law, or it could be something that is, revamping an entire area of law. I think the biggest takeaway that we would ask from the members is to make your expectations clear. We hate to have a research request made and then to find out, 3 days later you needed it because you were giving a speech and you really wanted that information, but we didn't know that at the time, so we didn't realize that we needed to get it back to you within 2 days. So just as long as you make your expectations clear, we do our very best to meet those expectations or negotiate with you what you need, when, and what we can give you, a few days later, things like that.
And typically the drafter is going to be in communication with you as to issues that are coming up. So if you have a need by a certain time and we've discovered there's a constitutional problem that we hadn't found before and we have to figure out what to do, they should be communicating with you so that if there are holdups, you would know.
Thank you very much to Julie and Megan, our panelists.